chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Greg Atchison on the show today. Greg is the principal chair of C12 of Greater St. Louis. So I am so excited today. I've been looking forward to this now for a while, but I have got my good friend Greg Atchison as a guest on the Something Extra podcast today. Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Yes, it is. And I know we're going to have a lot to talk about. You and I always really like to go back, Greg, and I know that you believe this and probably talk to your leaders about networking and who you have in your orbit and your tribe, right? It's so important.
Yeah.
So I always like to kind of go back and tell our listeners, you know, the genesis of a relationship. And I don't say yes all the time, but when I can, I always say yes to meeting somebody new, because you never know, right, where that relationship's going to take you, right? And the good things that can come out of that. And so you and I think met back in 2017 is when we officially connected, because we both know Rick and Kathy Box.
Right. That's right.
And their work with the Integrity Resource Center. And then I think, which is now UBN, Unconventional Business Network. And so I think maybe we were at an event together and then got to meet or something like that. But I know that was the genesis of how you and I met.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
And we've been joined.
They're still great friends.
Yeah, they are for us too. In fact, they were just in town recently and had lunch with those guys, and they're doing great stuff based out of Kansas City. But I know that you grew up in Indiana. Yeah, I'd love to hear about you growing up, but I also know that you married your high school sweetheart, Nancy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And Greg, you and I have a lot of things in common. You know, I mean, I married a Greg.
That's right.
My husband's name is Greg. Good name. Good name. Good strong name. But I don't know if you knew this about us, but we were high school sweethearts too. So we dated all through I wasn't supposed to be dating my freshman year, but, you know, I went to a few special things with him. You know, I remember, you know, like he played football and his junior football banquet, his mom asked my mom, "Hey, Greg would really like to take Lisa." And one thing led to another, and we came up with all kinds of special occasions so that we could be together. But yeah, so we were high school sweethearts too. I mean, you and I have a lot in common, actually. And we're going to talk about a few of those things. But, you know, tell me a little bit about growing up for you. And did you grow up with siblings? What did you like to do as a young boy?
Yeah, you know, so thank you. Thank you for the introduction. So I did grow up in Indiana. You know, I grew up in North Central Indiana. My parents were both school teachers. In fact, my dad was the principal of the schools. It seemed every time I would go grade up kind of thing, you know, where I went from elementary to middle school to high school, my dad followed me, it seems like. So there was always this, there are consequences to that, because when you have a bad day, you probably have it twice, you know, at school, and then you're going to hear about it at home also, kind of thing. But I grew up in central Indiana. Parents were both school teachers. I had two brothers and a sister. I was the oldest of four of us. And probably none of us were exceptionally close at the time, you know, but we're much closer now, kind of thing. And Indiana was one of those places. It was a great place to grow up, but it was not one of those places I wanted to live. So when we graduated and we got married, again, Nancy and I got married right out of high school, or she was a year older than me, but essentially right out of high school. And I joined the Air Force to see the world. So I enlisted in the Air Force, joined it to see the world, and got stationed 30 miles from home, you know, in central Indiana. And
Oh my goodness, that's seeing the world. You're branching out there, Greg.
that's
30
right.
miles.
Yeah, 30 miles, which at the time was, you know, in a way it was kind of a curse, in the sense that, you know, why couldn't I see more of the world? And yet it was also a blessing, because you're dirt poor right out of high school, and the car broke down, or you had to get home for somebody's emergency, you were at least close by, you know.
Right.
So looking back, it was a blessing.
Yes, oh, for sure. That's great. Well, I do know that you did join the Air Force right out of high school, and you became an Air Force officer. You know, who inspired you? I mean, did you come from a military family, or did your dad serve, or you know, what inspired you to join the Air Force, Greg?
Not a lot in Indiana, at least not the town that I grew up in. It was primarily, you know, there was an auto manufacturing operation. There was a General Motors plant there, and a school, a college there, but not a lot. I didn't see myself as a farmer. You know, I grew up outside of town in the rural areas, so I didn't see myself to be a farmer. And my father was he was an officer in the Army National Guard, so I had that as a background. And I don't know that I ever thought about joining the Army, but I was interested in the Air Force. You know, you go through a process of taking some tests and things like that. And, you know, they suggested, or just based on my score, suggested I get into the aircraft maintenance, loved airplanes, that kind of thing. And one thing led to another. And yeah, I'd already had scholarships to go to college and stuff, but I just could not see myself immediately jumping into school. Didn't know what I wanted to do with my life
You wanted to
until
see
after I
the
got a little
world.
older.
You wanted to see the world. 30
Yeah.
miles from home. You
Or
wanted
at least something outside of Indiana.
to. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I actually had read that about you. You said, I really joined the Air Force to get out of the cornfields.
That's right.
That
That's
was
right.
kind of your motivation. Well, you know, my dad was a Marine. Greg's dad was a sergeant in the Army. And I know my dad always said one of his favorite things to say about the military, he said, it will turn a boy into a man quicker than anything
Yeah.
is, you know, joining the military. So, you know, and I know too, I mean, I have you know, Greg, just met so many people that have that military background, and I know that it's a leadership lab. I mean, it is really the best leadership program out there, right?
That's right. For somebody who's aspiring to be a leader, it absolutely, absolutely true.
Yeah. How do you feel like joining the Air Force and what you did? And again, you became an officer in the Air Force, so you were leading at a very young age, probably guys much older than you. You were a young whippersnapper leading guys that were much older. But how do you think that that informed your leadership style? How do you think that inform your worldview, you know, and your view of the world being in the military.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of great things about the military, and one of those things is the fact that you can be thrown into some difficult situations early, you know. So as you described it, young, 20 years old kind of person, you know, had just work. I was a hard worker. One of the best things about the military is that it helps you to develop a great work ethic. Right. And so you want to at least I did. I wanted to work hard, and that's just my part of my credo is delivering excellence kind of thing. So that showed up early, I suppose. And because of that, I was thrown into situations where I was leading people who were older than me, and so then it becomes, it's not about, it's not about threatening with rank or things like that. It's about influence and how do I influence people? And it really becomes about relationships kind of thing. So much of that, some of the things I learned as a leadership lab kind of thing is just the fact that, I mean, there were officers, there were senior enlisted folks who really ran through autocracy. It's about the fact that I outrank you, do it because I said you're going to do it kind of thing. That kind of leadership, which doesn't go very far, and then to step in into an organization where it becomes much more about influence, right? And developing respect for each other kind of thing. But that goes a lot farther,
Right. Oh, for sure. Yeah, that is, my dad passed last August, Greg. I wish I'd asked him that question. I mean, I can presume some things. My dad was an incredibly hard worker. Yeah, I think probably the military had something to do with that. He grew up very poor, and so he just it, from a very early age was a very hard worker. Always 15 minutes early to everything. In fact, if you weren't 15 minutes early, you were late.
That's right.
You
Yep.
know, just incredible discipline, but was a great relationship builder too. So I'm just hearing you talk, I'm like, oh yeah, well, that's my dad. Yep, that's my dad. So anyway, what do you like character-wise, what are the qualities do you think that the military teaches? And I mean, I can presume a few character qualities, but what, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What do you believe it teaches?
The things that I think are most important come around to care in regards to character. So am I a person of integrity? Can I trust? Can I be trusted? Number one, competence. If I don't know it or I don't have that skill, am I going to go out and get that? So again, what gaps do I have? And then being very proactive to develop those skills.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, as you said, the competence piece, the military's a place where you don't want to fake it. Because if you try and fake it, somebody might lose their life, right? I mean, so yeah, that's good. When you were in the military, I mean, can you speak to the, because it is a team, right? I mean, every person playing their role, but that teamwork and collaboration in those military settings, can you talk about how that's even influenced or related? How does that relate to your life now? I mean, we'll talk about what you did after you retired from the military. But how did that influence, business or your life?
I think so. One of the things that you learn right up front is the fact that no person can do it alone, right? That it requires a team. It requires a village, if you will. So whether it be deploying to a foreign location, there were times where I was part of an air wing in Idaho, and we were really a bit of an experiment. It was a project from the chief of staff, the top Air Force general, and this was his, quite frankly, it was his master's thesis when he got his graduate degree, that this is the structure that he was projecting kind of thing, and we were the laboratory for that kind of thing. So our first deployments overseas, to be tried kind of thing, was it literally took a village to make that kind of thing happen, right? So you learn that that I can only do so much, that I need a whole host of others to take care of the logistics and the planning and the mobilization, and then the execution, all of those things.
Well, I think was it you retired in 1998, something around the late 90s, right? And
I retired from the Air Force in 1998. That's right. Yes.
yeah, and then took a job in Seattle, kind of teaching airplane technician, kind of because you'd been around that, right? So it only made sense that you would have done that. You did that for a few years. But what I really want to dig into now, because I want to spend a lot of time on what you're doing today, but in 2003, you took a role at Boeing, you know, and that's something else we have in common, Greg. So Greg and I, after our, you know, after we graduated from college, we were both recruited by McDonnell Douglas, which eventually, of course, merged with Boeing, I think, in a very big stock deal, multi-billion dollar stock deal in 97. But yeah, that's something else that we've got a lot of things in common. But, you know, I counted up over the 13 years that you were there, you had five different roles. So, you know, that is one thing I, in the 3.5 years that are the 5 years, 5.5 years that I was there, I had seven different roles, you know, cause I was part of a rotational program for the first 3 years of that, 5.5 years. But, you know, most of the things that you did were in training, research, leadership development. Yeah, I'd love to hear your journey, the journey that you took at Boeing. And then, you know, I really want to talk about how Boeing developed their leaders, because that's ultimately, you were in the research and the learning center, you know, for Boeing. So,
yeah, I was blessed. And again, it goes back to God's put me in some very strategic experiences, you know, starting with even in my Air Force career, because I spent 2 years as an Air Force instructor teaching, you know, essentially new recruits on how to work on airplanes once they graduated from basic training, and then they got their initial assignments. You know, a number of them are going to go out and work on airplanes. And that's where I, one of my first big moves out of Indiana was to North Texas. And, you know, I said, you know, at that time, it's probably still holds true, the greatest fear of man is public speaking. And I said, well, if I can tackle public speaking, then that's probably a good thing. So I signed up to become an Air Force instructor, teaching others kind of thing, and just getting up in front of others and getting comfortable with that. But that gave me the background then to move into Boeing. So when I retired from the Air Force, joined Boeing in Seattle, I was doing airline training. So I moved from kind of the military role to a commercial airline training. Ultimately ended up running their training center up there, co-leading their training center in Seattle. And then eventually led me to St. Louis in 2003 to take a couple. I was working on a couple of defense programs with the Japanese and Italian air forces.
Very cool. Well, tell me, Boeing, goodness gracious, I don't even know how many employees. Now, when Greg and I were at McDonnell Douglas, there were about 45,000, 50,000. But I think Boeing probably has, what, 100? Am I exaggerating when I say maybe 180,000 employees? I don't know. It's a lot. I know, Greg.
I can't speak for today.
Yeah.
I think it's probably closer to 150,000. But at the time, we were probably about 170,000. You know, that we're talking about at the time, Boeing was in 90 different countries, if my numbers are correct. You know, the vast majority of those people are on the West Coast, you know, primarily in some in Southern California. Again, Boeing is a business, a company of acquisition. So they had acquired a number of companies to include McDonnell Douglas, but Hughes, you know, they're now in the space and all of those kind of things. So. You know, they're essentially all on the West Coast. Commercial airline business is primarily Seattle and now Charleston, South Carolina also.
Yes, yes.
And then defense side of the business is primarily out of St. Louis, Philadelphia, Mesa, Arizona kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it was about 160,000, 170,000 people. I think they're smaller now, but probably between 140,000 and 150,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just thinking as, you know, as we're talking here, Greg, not to the extent of the Boeing Learning Center, but even when Greg and I were at McDonnell Douglas, they were huge on professional development. And I mean, if I wanted to learn how to write better, you know, because I was in contracts for a while. And then, you know, when I eventually was in corporate accounting and internal audit and that, but I mean, I can remember, you know, if I wanted to learn how to write better, there were writing classes and I would go to writing classes. I mean, and it was encouraged, you know, and so with that many employees, to really outsource all your training or to send your employees somewhere would have been incredibly expensive and inefficient, you know. So building up your own learning center. So how, you know, did you guys write your own curriculums? Was it kind of a hybrid approach? I mean, tell me a little bit about the learning center.
Yeah, and we're talking about the Boeing Leadership Center, right? So this is, so we primarily, I would say it's a bit of a hybrid. You know, originally when the Leadership Center opened in the late 90s, you know, they were primarily using third-party instructors. You know, they were bringing in people like Ram Charan, who was a Harvard professor, and others like Ram to come in and deliver training. So they would come in. Ram would come in and speak for a week or share for a week or so with senior executives. You know, ultimately, you know, it began to trickle down to others. And then we began to bring on our own instructors, right, and our own course developers and things. And then we would find specific expertise where we would have to bring in third parties, or we would partner with a company like an organization like Duke Corporate Education, for example, which had great facilitators. And then they would partner with people developing simulations, business simulations, things like that. That would just be too big for a company like Boeing, but they were great partners for us.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, I tell you what, I've got lots of things I want to talk about because I really want to dig into what you're doing today. And I know you're super passionate about that, but we do need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast. So, Greg, I mean, really and truly, I mean, I said this in a sideline conversation, but you're a lifelong learner. So, I mean, this whole idea of like what you're doing today and teaching others, and then, you know, even going back to being an Air Force instructor, I mean, you know, you're a learner yourself. So, I know that you're also a voracious reader. And that's something else you and I have in common. I always have three or four books going at the same time. But, you know, I know that's one of the ways that you've continued to grow. But what are you reading right now? Do you have a book you're reading right now?
You know, I'm reading J.D. Greer's Essential Christianity, which is sitting here in my hand kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that, and then also the latest in the Dan Sullivan series of books kind of thing, you know.
Okay. Very good. Well, if you had to, maybe one or two, if there's an emerging leader that's listening right now, I mean, if you had to recommend, oh, you got to read this book, you know, or one or two, what would it be for you that you would recommend?
I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek, you know, so Simon has written a number of great books, you know, but one is Leaders Eat Last kind of thing.
I love
right?
that.
Mm-hmm. Just from a leadership perspective, I just think that it's a great place to start.
Yeah. Being a servant leader, how can you serve, you know, your exactly. people, right? Yeah. That is awesome. Well, you know, and you've gone on to get multiple degrees. I know that you've got a PhD in organizational management. I mean, you've got a master's, you've got a master's in management and acquisition management from Webster. You've got the PhD in organizational management with specialization in leadership. You've gone on to do, you know, get a graduate certificate in professional executive coaching. The licenses and the certifications here, I'm just like, wow. I mean, it's a lot. Master trainer, professional certified coach, 6 types of working genius certification. I mean, you've just continued to grow. I mean, how important has that been for you, Greg, and even what you're doing today for you to continue to grow yourself?
Yeah. You know, I think John Maxwell would say, you know, if we're not growing, we're not going kind of thing. You know, it's that cliche, and I hold true to that. Sometimes it drives my wife crazy, you know, when another book comes, you know, when the Amazon guy drops off another box just about every day kind of thing, it seems like. But yeah, for me, it is, you know, and I'm just a curious bent, I suppose, you know, so I want to stay well read, you know, because I work with Christian business leaders, you know, they're facing challenges and I want to be able to make sure that I can pour into them.
Yes. I always say you can't pour out what you don't possess yourself, right? So as a leader, you cannot get so depleted because, you know, you need to be whole, you know, yourself. And sometimes that just requires stepping back for a little bit too, you know, from what you're doing. But yeah, I love that. Yeah, I'm a big Amazon person too. And I like personally, I know people are different. My husband is more of an Audible or, you know, on his Kindle. I'm like, no, I need the physical book. I highlight. But let me ask you a question. Okay. Cause this begs a different question. You know, as you're reading, you know, what are some of your hacks, Greg? I mean, do you do an outline of what you've read or do you kind of try to summarize? Because I will tell you, that is one of the things that I really do believe that sometimes can happen is you can read, read, read. But then if you never take the time to really kind of internalize what you're reading, say, how does this apply to me? And then start practicing, you know, I mean, it really is of very little value, maybe with just a few little facts that you can throw out, right? But how have you personally done that?
I don't know that I have any specific hacks except to say that I'm a kinesthetic person. So like you, I'd much rather have a hard, you know, I'd much rather have a paper copy of a book, and I will highlight, you know, I kind of have different levels of importance of the things that I'm reading. So think about a basic highlight. These are you know, words or phrases that I want to, that are important to me. I will underline them. You know, if they're take another step of urgency, I will asterisk them if there's another step, and then I will dog ear the book kind of thing, that page, you know, just to kind of, again, where it makes it easier to go back and reference if I'm looking for quotes or I'm looking for something to support an argument, you know, and I need to go back and make reference. So if you were to flip through my books, you would see those kind of things. In many of the books that I will read, and then to go back into journal kind of thing also to say, what am I going to do with this newfound information? How can I apply it to myself?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think journaling is so important, you know, and not just to journal, but to go back and read what you've journaled, right? And not just to write it down and put it in a drawer, but go back and read it and kind of let it percolate a little bit, I think. Well, let's talk about this. So today you are the C12 chair. You've been that, I think you were a member since 2013, but you became the chair in 2016. And, you know, I find this, you know, I've told you in kind of a sidebar conversation, Greg, I wish so much that there had been, you know, or I had known about it, because there was. We founded our company in 1994. C12 was founded in 92. But, you know, we never had heard about it, right? I think it would have probably saved us some heartache and maybe, you know, having kind of that trusted advisor. And we did a lot of trial by fire and experimentation. But tell us a little bit. It was founded by Buck Jacobs. And I kind of did a little bit of a deep dive on him. And I know, because you're the chair, I know you know all about it. So you can tell us even more. But here's a quote that I love that he wrote. It said, "Life is short. Eternity is very long. Feed the one with the greatest reward." That's one that I highlighted, Greg, because I'm like, wow, you know, life is short, but eternity is very long. Feed the one with the greatest reward. And I just think that is, wow, what a perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Buck is, you know, Buck's in his mid-80s now. He's and a phenomenal guy. My first impression of him was, he's very well thought of. And he's now at kind of our emeritus. You know, he has that status. But I just saw him less than a month ago. Saw him in two different events in Kansas City with Rick Box. He came and spoke to Rick Box's group, and then he was there at Current 23, which is our national conference we held in Denver this year, kind of thing. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And really the founder of C12.
Right.
So, yeah.
He founded it in 1992. I think it started in Orlando. I don't know if he lives in Orlando or not. I'm heading to Orlando tomorrow to go to Universal Studios.
There you go. So quite frankly, he started in the Tampa area.
Okay.
You know, he started in the Tampa area, and you know, his story is, you know, again, C12's 31 years old. He was a partner in a business in Chicago. The two partners, he had just come to faith, and a guy named Bob Mackey, who owned this business in Chicago that sold lubricants, think about machine shops and things like that, industrial lubricants. He had called Buck and said, "Hey, Buck, I want you to come to work for me." And he said, "I'm going to run this company according to God's principles." And Buck said, "You know, I just gave my life to Christ the day before." But, you know, so Bob invited him to come help co-lead that business, and they did that for 10 years. And then they sold that business. And then he was looking for something to do. They moved to Tampa. He and his wife had moved to Tampa to start a golf ministry. And I'm thinking maybe when you play golf every day, it's no longer fun. It becomes a job.
Right.
And then he said, "What else can I do?" And he loved the peer group concepts that you're familiar with. And he loved that. But he said, "I know God has a perspective, so I want to build something." And he whiteboarded it with some of his golf buddies. And he said, would you support this? Would you do this? And that was the launch of C12. So he did that for a number of years, had two thriving groups of his own. And then one of his members said, "Hey, I want to do what you're doing." He was a Dale Carnegie instructor or a business owner. And he said, "I'd like to do that too." And that was the launch really of the C12 model, where we've since grown. You know, now we're 170 people who do what I do around the country. We're in four international sites, looking to grow to another dozen in the next few years, kind of thing. So God's
incredible. Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know how many members you have now. How many members do you guys have, Greg? Do you know?
Just went over 3,800.
My goodness, that is crazy. Well, you know, and we'll put this in our show notes, you know, the URL for C12, but you guys do executive mentoring, you're building Christian community with leaders in these cohorts, professional development training. You know, you have sent me a lot of the material, Greg, and it is really good. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the 5-point alignment matrix, because I think you kind of start with that, if I'm not mistaken. But talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about a few other things before we talk about something extra.
You bet. So we were talking, so the 5-point alignment matrix is really built on the balanced scorecard approach. You know, so except we would add ministry to it. So when we think about business, we always look at it from 5 perspectives, or content and the way that we run a business. So we always think about revenue generation, think about sales, think about marketing, think about distribution. So revenue generation, we think about it from operations management perspective. So processes, you know, what are your processes look like, the tools, all of those kind of things. We think about it from an org development perspective. That's really the people side, thinking about culture, best practices around for hiring, for firing, all of those kind of things, performance management. You know, that's really the org development side of it. Mm-hmm. And then we think about it from a financial management perspective. Again, how are we tracking progress around KPIs, managing our money, stewarding the business, right? And then that's everything that you would see in a balanced scorecard. And then we add on top of that ministry. So, you know, my job as a C12 chair is to remind our business owners that God owns everything. He owns all the cattle on the hills. He owns everything. So we are not really the business owners. We're simply stewarding a business for him. And that we have a responsibility as business owners to shepherd a flock of people. That includes your employees. That includes their families. That includes the community. That includes your competitors, your clients, your customers, your vendors. All of those things. So how do we use this business that we've been blessed to use, right? How do we use that for kingdom purposes? How do we care for people, kind of thing? So all of our curriculum, all of our measurements are based on that 5-point alignment matrix. And if you were to look at our you look at our logo, C12, it's a pentagram, which is really a five-sided approach kind of thing.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I am telling you, there is there is so many great resources and articles. They've got something called a chart to do biblical ownership audit of your business, kind of based on the Malcolm Baldrige Award, but really from a faith perspective. If you are interested in learning more, please, I would just ask you, listeners, reach out to Greg. I know he would love to share more. And I know a lot of the C12 members. I hear the stories about the value that they have, not just from the curriculum, but from learning from one another, and having kind of that cadre of like-minded business owners. So it's just wonderful, wonderful resources there. But I have a little lightning round that I want to do with you, Greg, before we talk about something extra. This may be really hard. I sometimes don't like these things because I'm like, oh my goodness, there's so much advice that I've received over the years. But can you think off the top of your head some of the best business advice you've ever received?
I think when I think about that, I think about just a reminder. And we talked about Simon Sinek and Leaders Eat Last. And it would start with, remember where you came from, where you grew up, if you will. Right, which really comes around. We're all created in God's image. We all have value in the sense that, no matter what rank you are in the business, we all have infinite value and ought to be respected.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I would start with that. I would also start with making sure that we know our numbers. Business owners notoriously, only 22% of the top CEOs in the Fortune 100 have any financial or business background from a financial perspective.
What was that percentage?
22% of the top Fortune 100 CEOs, came out of a CFO or accounting background kind of thing. So, and yet we're stewarding a business, so we need to make sure that we are comfortable with the numbers. We have a CFO, we have others, mm-hmm. Who are overseeing those on a regular basis, but ultimately the buck stops with us.
Yeah.
So we have to appreciate the gravity of that, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just in talking to you right now, remind me, there's somebody I need to connect you with in Dallas, a good friend that I think might be a good resource even for your members related to that. Yeah. Okay. You and Nancy have been married for a long time.
Yeah.
What's the key to a successful marriage?
So we are coming up on 48 years and
congratulations. It's a long time.
Well, thank you. I suppose, one, humility, that it's not about me. When we got married, we said till death do us part, sickness and in health, that we understood that. We've had lots of challenges and everything like that, but God's been, seeing us through all of those things.
Yeah. I would say that's for us too. We're coming from the same playbook, but it's not without its challenges. Now, Greg just said last night, happy wife, happy life. Unhappy wife, lots of strife.
There you go. That's right.
He coined that last night. Yeah. So about the strife part, I'd never heard that That's part, right. but yeah. But let me ask you, okay. So this is an interesting question. I love this. I had asked you, I said, there is a picture. It looks like some aspen trees or something in the background on your wall, Greg, with a buffalo in the picture. And I said, what's the significance of the buffalo? What did you tell me?
Yeah. So as I described it, C12 has adopted the buffalo really as our, think about a mascot. It's not an official mascot, but it's really part of our culture. So we have a whole sub brand, if you will, called buffaloculture.com. In the story, the metaphor we use is if you were to go to Colorado, if you were to go to Wyoming, Montana, any place, you would see a herd of buffalo out in a pasture, out in the field, out in the wild. You might very well see a herd of cattle at the same time. And if there's a storm coming through, whether it be a snowstorm or rainstorm, the buffalo will charge into that storm. The cows will run away from it. But ultimately, the cattle will spend far more time in in the chaos, in the hurricane, whatever it is that's going on, you know. So the analogy is to charge into it. So we talk about a buffalo culture, meaning let's have those hard conversations. Let's don't dance around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about the elephant in the room. So for us, it's very much about supporting each other, but no fear around those difficult conversations, whether they're performance conversations, whether they're cultural conversations, whatever that is. Let's put it on the table.
Mm-hmm. It's a great analogy. And I'm a visual person too. You know, so Greg, having those reminders, I think for me, you know, is really important, probably other people too. I know one of your favorite pastimes is fly fishing. Yeah, spending time with Nancy, right? But also fly fishing, right? Where do you go fly fishing?
I'm terrible at it, you know, but it's great therapy for me. So whether that be, Central Missouri is not known for its fly fishing. So we have to drive a couple of hours, but, so going south, you know, so I will routinely fly, drive out to Cuba or Steelville. So think about that area. There's, you know, the state parks that are down that way, whether it be Bennett Springs, Montauk, places like that. I'll go to a private place called Westover Farms also, which has great fishing kind of thing. You know, if I have my druthers, it would be Colorado or Montana kind of thing, but I can't do that very often.
Right. Well, I was going to say, I never went fly fishing either, but several years ago, probably five, it was definitely pre-pandemic. So probably 5 years ago, our family did a dude ranch in Montana, and mm-hmm. we went fly fishing every day in the Gallatin River. And there's just something different about it, isn't it, Greg? I mean, it's, you know, the flick of the wrist. I mean, it's just, it is, it's really fun.
Yeah. For me, it's therapy. So just whether I'm standing in the water or standing on the banks of the water, one, just to be able to appreciate the creation.
Yes.
Right. I mean, there's something about that. There's something about running water, you know, and mm-hmm. to be out in the middle of it is it's cathartic for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Well, let me ask you this, Greg. This is called Something Extra. Yeah. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah. I have two perspectives on that, or two things that I would offer for that. One is, from my perspective, every leader needs quiet time with the boss. So for me, again, as a Christian, if God owns it all and I'm just stewarding this business with him, I have to start my day early in the morning, spending an hour with the boss, right? So mm-hmm. to spend time in the word, to spend time talking to him, and to spend time listening, you know, so quiet time is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the second thing would be to surround yourself with a group of peers who will hold you accountable, who will pour into you, who will encourage you, who will challenge you. And that's, you know, there's tremendous power in peers, you know.
Could not agree more. Yeah, could not agree more. And I hope our listeners, if you don't have a group of peers, you know, I pray that you find one, because you got to have those people in your life, your tribe, whatever you want to call it, right? So, Greg, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for making the time. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.